I'm Dina Del Bucchia.
And I'm Daniel Zamparelli.
And this is Can't Lit.
Can't Lit. Talk about books and stuff.
Hi, it's episode 33 of Can't Lit. That was Adina. That was the tiny pig.
Oh my God, it's so cute. Daniel,
I'm tickling to death
that you got this new home, but also finally decided to get a pet. This tiny pig is so adorable.
We've got special guest Ellie Crawley Gardner.
Ellie Gardner, how are you?
Hi, guys. I'm really excited to be in this underground recording studio. I had no idea that Spielberg was putting up all this money for you, but I have to say that these seats and the video screens and the pig pen, everything is really amazing.
We like to call it a pig den.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a man cave, but for the pig. So it can really live its best life.
We're drinking delicious Prosecco in honor of Ellie's new book that's out.
Yeah, we're cheersing Ellie's debut.
This is officially my first bubbly for this book. So thank you for that. So
we're
I'm going to cheers you right now.
Oh. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Thank you so much.
We are so happy to provide.
All right. Dina, I feel like you should start with what's happening.
Oh, what's happening? I had a very nice weekend with my friends. We went to this place called Garden Bay, BC, which sounded fake when people, when we were booking it, they were like, yeah, this is what it's called. I'm like, that's not a place. It sounds like it's in a storybook, but it was a real place. It was tiny and cute up the Sunshine Coast in BC. And we stayed in a log cabin. And it was, I just can't even say anything. It was just so nice. It was very relaxing.
There was a dog in all your
eating
Instagram
and drinking.
Photos.
And so the people who also live on the property in a different cabin, because obviously there's tons of space up there. So we had a hot tub, which I was in multiple times per day. But also this beautiful dog. His name was Brinks. He was so sweet. He kept putting his head on everyone's lap, but he was the kind of dog that was really friendly and nice and wanted to hang out with you, but he would never get up in your face too much. Like, he wasn't trying to overwhelm you. He was like, no, I want us to get along, but I want to respect you.
Oh, he's like a feminist.
Yeah, he was. He was a total feminist dog, and I really loved him.
In one of your Instagram photos, he was just like giving this look like, I'm here too, having fun.
Yeah.
Like, it looked planned.
You can tell that he wanted to join in.
He's like,
I have
I'm
a photo.
Selfie.
I took a selfie of me and the dog, and the first thing he did was just lick my nose. And in the next photo, he's just like got his head pressed against mine, and we sounds like a different kind
of weekend.
Like best chums. Best chums.
Okay.
Best buddies. No, he was so nice. And I don't know why this is a thing, but I feel like people always just want to feed dogs. They're like, oh, here, have some human food. And I am 100% the person that is like disciplined. I'm like, no, do not feed that dog any human food. Nobody do it. It stresses me out. I feel like you're going to do something to that dog's gastrointestinal system that's going to fuck it up. And that's mean. That's like a mean thing to do. So we didn't feed the dog all weekend because we're good people. It stresses me out.
Imagine that's how they get the dog fed, is they think that people will feed it.
Oh, God,
yeah, they're like, your damage deposit is rescinded. You didn't feed the dog.
No.
I had a bad experience feeding a pig once when I was little.
Don't feed this pig.
I won't feed this little pig, but we gave my uncle's pig 7-Up, my cousin Tara and I.
Oh, my God.
And we thought it would really – the pig loved it, but it got the hiccups, and we totally thought it was going to explode. We came to my uncle.
Like threw a Mentos in its mouth?
No, we just literally poured it some 7-Up, and the poor pig, it didn't agree with it, and we literally thought we'd killed the pig, so we had to go confess to my uncle.
So sad. Anyway, we didn't hurt this dog, and he was fine. I don't know. Maybe people think that I'm a cruel bitch, but I'm not just going to go around feeding dogs.
PETA doesn't.
Someone's like, here you go. This is food you can feed my dog. Or my dog eats garbage and it's fine. I'll be like, great. Here's...
Everybody knows the stories of like when you feed a dog something, it just throws it up.
Yeah.
Like everyone says that.
Dogs are just doing stuff anyway on their own that makes them throw up. Eating dirt, eating grass.
Let's not talk
about
that part.
Poison mice, eating whatever. I don't know. It's gross. Anyway, this trip was great. I swam in the lake on May 14th, which I think is the earliest I've ever gone swimming in like a mountainous lake. It was so nice. And I wouldn't say warm, but it was pleasant. I loved it. Hot tubs. Hanging out. I learned how to play dominoes.
You're living like the Canadian life.
Yeah, it's really weird. But now I'm back in the city. Just being a cold.
Hanging out with Taylor Swift.
Yep. She was there.
Yeah.
She was staying at a different, like a, more of a chalet up the mountain even yeah. more. We were like second to top of the mountain. So our view was really good. But obviously Taylor was at the top.
She's at the top looking
she
down on
you. She was throwing her garbage Moe bottles down onto yeah. us. She's like, do you guys need the deposit from these? Yeah. So it was pretty great. I do have mosquito bites, which I don't like.
That is gross.
Ellie, what's happening with you?
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. I'm just going to, you know, I was thinking about this. I was really excited about talking to you guys. I feel a little bit like I'm at the Senate committee meetings. I've got the microphone. I'm sitting across from a table from you both. We're asking each other questions. But I thought I would just, you know, one thing I've been super into lately is Hamilton, the musical. Oh. So I thought I would just sing a couple pieces from the songbook a cappella.
That sounds great.
I'm totally not doing
I know
that.
You're not.
But. I was like, oh, is this going to be great or
it
terrible?
Is,
I don't know.
It is great.
Horrible.
I would have been into it.
Horrible.
We also
I was like,
listened
I'd like to, hear those songs.
To Hamilton
yeah.
while we were at the cabin.
Yeah, I love it.
Log cabins in Hamilton.
Yeah.
Just totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Burn.
Yeah.
Burn.
How can, and that's only on Broadway right now,
yeah,
right?
And yeah. they're getting together traveling companies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's, and it's also impossible to get tickets
yeah.
to it, right?
That's why there's all this Scamilton talk where people are getting scammed out of
tickets. Oh, I'd go see Scamilton.
No, people are getting scammed out of tickets. Oh my God, what if there was a combination Hamilton and Scandal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would definitely watch that. Shonda Rhimes, I know you listen to this podcast. Can you please call us? Make Scamilton the Scandal-Hamilton combo that our hearts deserve.
Okay, so then... Beyond Hamilton.
Beyond Hamilton.
What I have a question about Hamilton.
Oh. Go ahead.
Are you listening to the soundtrack heavily?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I am.
Cool. That's good. I like what you're doing.
It appeals to me on several levels. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that it's narrative. It turns out I really like I listen to podcasts. I always go towards the ones that are narrative, like stories and memories and history and stuff. Of course, I religiously listen to Can't Lit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, ours is a really strong narrative.
Really strong.
Threads that are connected the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
No tangents. Tight. Zero tangents.
Or as the poets like to say, the warp and weft of Can't Lit is tight.
Thank you.
Yeah. So anyway.
Are people
so
calling us warp and weft?
Is what yeah, you're your warp.
Is that our name?
She's weft.
Yes! This is beautiful.
But the Hamilton thing's really good because, as you might or might not know, I'm from Boston.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're a secret American.
Not so secret, evidently. I have no problem owning the fact that I'm from Boston. And so all of those stories that are being told in Hamilton, it's not that distant from what I grew up. I mean, there was a statue of Alexander Hamilton right outside my front door when I was little. So
did you go outside and just sit on it every day?
No, I didn't even know it was Alexander Hamilton until
last
museum? Week. No, I just live in Boston. It's like things that are old are all around us there.
Right, like every park has like five minimum statues per like square mile.
Yeah, and one to Matt Damon.
Of course.
Right?
Wait, is there...
There's no statue of Matt Damon.
But like,
there's
cool.
a statue of Matt Damon.
Do you think there's a way to make a statue of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck making out a part of the urban landscape?
Oh, that'd be great.
Yes. There's always room for that.
And
there's
just
a Dr. Seuss statue,
like
so why not?
The pages of the script to Good Will Hunting are just like formed a heart.
No, I feel like it needs to be like born Matt Damon and Gone Girl Ben Affleck.
Sure. All right. That's fine.
That forever kissing.
Okay, great. That sounds fine.
Sorry. Their peak hotness.
Okay. There is a statue of Dr. Seuss, though.
Yeah, there is.
Damn.
Yeah.
What do we have? We have Gassy Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got that guy.
Got to videotape that clock.
Yeah. The clock is its own special problem.
The clock is our most important hero here.
Yeah. There's that. I like the wetsuit. The wetsuit girl.
What's
in
the
Stanley Park?
Oh, the Littlest Mermaid? The Little Mermaid?
Yeah, but it's not really a mermaid. It's like a woman in a wetsuit. I like that a lot.
I have two favorite statues in the city. I love the rocket ship statue at the foot of the Canby Bridge right by the cop
mm-hmm.
shop.
Yeah.
I really love that.
That is great.
Mod silver spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one I love is the one at the Seabus Terminal of the fallen soldier being lifted by the angel.
Yeah.
I find that beautiful. I hate the poodle on Main Street. I really detest the poodle.
Most people, I feel, do hate that
poodle. I'm pissed off because it's out of the sight lines and it's already covered in moss. It's way too high.
Maybe that's
up.
Part of what it's supposed terrible. To do. Maybe it's supposed to just become like a green carpeted poodle.
I love there's all these animals at the corner of Georgia and Thurlow. Have you ever seen this? And there's animals kind of like in a pile.
Is it like plastic or resin?
No. It looks like it's like sculpted out of something very hard.
I can't picture it.
But on the bottom is an otter. And I always feel like it's holding everything up.
Yeah.
As like the otter is so tiny and yet it's on the bottom like being like a support beam.
Not unlike Daniel's pig.
Totally.
It's my support beam. Just in case anyone in the audience can hear, they are definitely doing lawn maintenance outside my place right now.
The estate is being manicured.
Yeah. I know we're in a bunch
of a perfect time.
Yeah. Anything else going on, Ellie?
I just got back from book tour.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
How was your book
tour? That was unbelievable. Like, huge shout out to Anvil Press for sending me on this book tour.
Your book tour seemed amazing.
It was
amazing.
It looked so fantastic.
It was amazing. And God bless you, internet, because I think one of the things... We might get into this later, but one of the things that's a little bit difficult about being a writer is you go on these ostensible book tours and you're lonely and you're like alone in the Motel 8 in some scuzzy place. You don't know where it is. You don't know where the reading is. It's like scary and lonely. But thanks to the interwebs, I had friends in every city at every reading. So people that I had corresponded with online on Facebook, on Twitter, but I had never met in real life. So it felt like I was walking into a really warm situation in each place.
Mm. It is so nice.
It was really
nice.
And
I think people really underestimate the fact that you can buy, I mean, there's many examples of people being shitty internet citizens, but if you're like a good person online and you're reaching out to people, that people will reciprocate and be cool to you and be excited about your success.
Yeah, totally. I met this guy. I pulled up for this one reading in St. Catharines into a parking lot. And I was with Jennifer Zilm, who was also reading with me, and she offered to pay for parking. And the parking lot was totally abandoned and empty on Friday night. And there was this guy walking across the parking lot with his two daughters, maybe they were like 20. They were saying, yeah, don't worry about it. You don't have to pay for parking. There's no fee tonight. So he sort of jokingly looked at me and called across the parking lot, oh, I'll pay for your parking. And I was like, hey, thanks. That's so nice. Like both of us laughing because he didn't have to pay. And then his daughter realized that, oh, in fact, indeed, they did have to pay. It was $5. So I kind of looked at him like joking around, like, okay, man, like buck up. You said you were going to pay for it. And he balked a little bit. But then we started talking and he's like, what are you doing here? What's this rental car about? And I said, hey, I'm here for a reading. And he goes, no way, you've got a book. And he ended up, he pulled out a 20. He's like, how much is your book? So I sold him two books in the parking lot. And he's
great
like,
news.
And he goes, hey, are you on Twitter? And I said, well, yes. And he said, let's get a picture because I'm on Twitter too. And he ended up tweeting it and was like the super nice, spontaneous poetry supporter.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Like that kind of thing is so, it's just so delightful when you, I think book tour, you don't, it's not just about the readings. It's about all of the stuff in between. Like the reading is so short, right? Like you travel all that way. It's what, 7 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 or whatever. But all those other little things that happen are so magical.
And I feel like, especially with poetry, the book tour is such a big part of it. I mean, for some people completely don't want to go on book tours or readings, and that's fine. But for me, it's like, and knowing the numbers of how sales work, it's like it's usually the biggest push of sales. Like, sure, there's going to be books that get awards and like get bigger press and they'll get more sales. But for the most part, you're selling your own book and you're meeting all the people who are buying it and reading it all at once. And it's like, it is a very kind of magical experience.
It is.
And there's always like, or I guess from people we know, there is always a story of like your parking lot story where it's like, there's always just somebody who kind of surprises you. And it's like, oh, you have a book and they'll just buy it randomly off you. And I don't know that
you sold a book on the plane one time. One of your books.
I think I just gave it to them.
Or whatever. I remember you had like a good conversation with some woman on a plane.
She bought it afterwards.
That's great.
She put it, she wrote it down and then bought it afterwards.
It's just real cute.
Yeah.
Also,
when you're doing all that stuff and you don't know people in person and you only know them online, the other thing happens when your book comes out where then everyone's just taking adorable photos of it and tweeting them at you or like posting them on Facebook. Because I've definitely seen people being like, look what I got. And it's a picture of Ellie's book. I love doing that. And I'm like,
When I go to bookstores and I see my friends' books, I mean, I've done that to both of you guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I love that. It's like walking into a bookstore and seeing a friend.
It is. Right? It makes me really happy and excited.
It's also just so magical.
Yeah.
The whole thing is magical.
It's all magical. That's why Dress Like a Book is so important to me.
Yeah. Oh, and thank you, because I'm totally dressed like a podcast today.
You are.
I'm sure everyone
can
imagine
just exactly
what kind of clothes I'm wearing for Can't Lit.
Just a full-on red and white.
Yeah.
Circle shape.
A lot of no buttons pinned all over me.
Yeah, it's really great.
It's a big sphere.
Yeah. It's like a red and white Ms. Pac-Man outfit.
It's super comfortable to drive in.
It looks great. Dizzo.
Yeah.
What's happening?
I felt like I already did mine, which is not true.
You didn't say anything.
No. And done. I just came back from LA. I mean, I leave again, so I guess coming back and going is no longer like a... I just came back. But this time I had 4 days on my own, which was really nice, to finish the final draft of the short fiction book. And that... it was a nice reminder that I can actually write things. They may not be good, but they'll words will come down on a page. And because I hadn't written in forever. And it's such a annoying.
Why do we forget so quickly?
I don't know.
Why does that happen?
I don't know. Because it just also feels so difficult and new
and
every
goldfish
time.
Goldfish have the same brain. Yeah. That's why.
And each poem or story's different. So it's like, it is a new thing each time you have a blank page that you're trying to.
That's a deep thought, Jack Handy.
Yeah. For me, that's how that feels. With the short stories, I'm like, well, this is the idea. I have no idea how to make this happen, but I'm going to try.
And then, so you had a little writing retreat.
I did. Yeah. And I fully, all the stories are in there. I just need to do some more editing and rejigging, and then that's it.
Somebody listen to me. Please publish Danielle's book.
And then publish Dina so we can go back on tour together.
Yeah. Listen, Danielle and I got some short stories. If you're not into this, you might be right, but also you might be wrong.
Are you doing short stories too? Yep. Are you working on a
Her book's thing? Her book was done 2 years ago.
That's not
But
true.
She just keeps adding new stories.
I got some stuff.
Yeah.
You're trying to make an anthology of your own work?
Yeah, I want it to be I want to have a David Foster Wallace size book of short stories.
Actually, I agree with that.
Oh, okay. It's too big. It's too much. Yeah. Okay. That guy wrote too much. Listen, people can come down on me for saying that, but it's a bit boring. No?
Yeah.
Anyone?
This table dynamic is really working for me because I can now pretend I'm interviewing two of you.
Yeah,
so
I like
I'll just
that.
Say, yeah. Dina and Daniel, are there any points of contact between your separate and discrete manuscripts? Do you reference anything of each other or your work?
I quote her in one of them.
Oh, right.
I quote, what is it? Is it?
It's in the...
It's like How to Ruin a Sunset? Or Ruin a Sunset.
Ruin a Sunset, yeah.
Yeah.
And do you talk about Daniel at all?
No.
Oh, I forgot. You show up one of his... in one of the new stories.
Oh, great news.
There we go.
My stories are pretty separate from my real life.
Are you going to have a nom de plume?
No, they're going to be, it's going to be me.
Okay.
It's going to be Dina Del Coolio.
So Daniel's holding on and won't let go and your CEO wouldn't want to be you?
No, I'm not that at all.
Okay.
My next book is only going to be about Daniel.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just because her short stories are all completely fiction and mine are halfway, they are fiction and then also nonfiction and they meet in between. So at a certain point, my character enters into the magical realism world that half the stories take place in. And so that's why it's that's the point of mine. Whereas Dina's is all very, it's a very fiction. There's no crossover at all.
Yeah, the stories are all completely independent of each other.
You can also. You can see, you're like, this character is definitely not Dina.
Yeah, and there, I mean, there are thematic
except for
things.
One where it's like, because there's a character I feel like,
oh,
who's drunk and steals things.
That could be.
That is or isn't Dina.
That could be me.
Half of it is.
Like 19-year-old me, that could have been me.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Dina, I light fingers still like Lucia.
I like all my characters, even the dicks.
Yeah.
I feel like you have to on some level.
Love the dicks.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Welcome to our new podcast, Love and Dicks.
Love the dicks. Who's perfect
into
segue.
Into
to
Ellie's book, Serpentine Loop. Serpentine, serpent. Dicks. Nailed it. It's perfect.
There we go.
Serpentine Loop is out with Anvil,
Anvil
correct?
Press.
I have to give you guys a visual. Dina and Daniel both have a copy of the book in their hands, and they're both looking down at it like Hillary Clinton reviewing her notes in the Benghazi trial.
It has the answers in it. It has the answer.
But it's okay. We don't have to talk about the actual book. We can talk around
the book. Oh, no. I feel like we do this every time where someone's here with their book, and we're like holding it up and
flipping through it, not really reading it.
Like, man, really
no,
love
I'm
going to
go through poem by poem and ask, is this you?
Oh, yeah.
Is this you?
Here we go. Here we
is
go.
Is this you?
Mm. Before Ellie got here, Daniel was talking about reading the book, and he was like, oh, it's so great. I published so many of these. And then I was like, yeah, it's true. It's good. Yes. That's the sign.
Shout out to Poetry's Dead.
Sign of a great book. So, because you've been working on the manuscript for a long time.
Yeah, a little while.
And sort of kind of honing what form it was going to take.
Not really. Okay, so let me clarify. So, I wrote a bunch of poems.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out how they fit together.
That's more what I'm asking.
The holdup, or maybe not to call it a holdup, but I think we all know that publishing is at times glacial.
Oh, yeah.
So there was one
times,
right? So sometimes it goes really fast, and sometimes it's just you're dying, and you don't know what's happening, and you're watching. You become an old woman before your book comes out.
You become Baba Yaga, and then finally
totally.
You have the power to do things to other people, and then you can enact your own.
I saw it more as a picture of Dorian Gray where like your book stays young.
And no, that's exactly it. So, what happened is when you submit a manuscript, you're not supposed to submit it to a slew of places at the same time. I have a real respect for authority, so I never do that. I think other people do, but I guess I'm wising up. But one publisher held it for 18 months.
I remember that you were going through.
What the hell is that all about?
I would call it rigmarole and or fuckery.
It wasn't so good. So that was like a real lead on, and then like a harsh dump, and so then you're back at the beginning. So but I have to say that the real accelerant in this whole process was working with this kick-ass editor, Angela Rawlings, who I adore. She is a magical fairy she and I have never met in real life. Again, internet friendliness. We've worked on a bunch of collaborative projects on the interwebs. And something just happened between our conversations where it just was like, she provided the accelerant. I had the pile of tinder, somebody threw a match, and boom. And so Anvil took it, and I signed the contract, and a year later it was on the shelves. So that part went really, really fast.
How long were you working with Angela?
Just, I guess, through that year.
Okay.
I thought of that I remember you was having this conversation because I'd constantly ask you, I'm like, what's happening? And me being bossy and being like, send them this, say this or whatever. Like, knowing full well it would do nothing, but I would just like...
Oh, it's helpful to hear that.
Like, and then, when it switched over, it was like you told me and you're like, and I was like, I just remember you being like, okay, it's not working.
I really thought my second manuscript was going to get published first because it had gotten shortlisted for The Croach. And then suddenly Serpentine Loop was like accepted, bam, let's go, boom, it's out. So that was exciting.
It is exciting. It's super exciting.
Is that second one coming out soon then too, or no?
I hope so. I'm just waiting to hear first refusal from Anvil. So that's a scoop for Cantlit right there.
Good scoop.
Good scoop.
But I mean, sometimes that's what happens. Like the heat is just within the text somehow of whatever you're doing.
I don't know. I think the whole, there's so many pieces to the jigsaw puzzle.
There's so much fucking luck.
Yeah. It's just weird timing and stuff. I don't know. I'm really happy with the way it all happened though. Like it was kind of agony waiting while it was at different publishers, but I was busy publishing and editing 7 other chapbook anthologies. Right. So it's like, it's not like I was sitting with nothing going on in my writing life.
Were you editing this during that time? Everyone's just like pawing at your manuscript. Or were you kind of putting it out of your mind and then coming back to it?
No, I would like wait and then come back to it. If they said, yeah, we really love it, but we don't see a place for it. I got the nicest rejection letters on it. I actually had them up on my fridge. Like they were so encouraging. I actually wrote a thank you letter for one of the rejection letters because they were like, this is great. We love this about it. We love that about it. So then I would go back and look at it then, but I didn't fiddle in between.
It's just doing its thing.
I think that's a good rule. Cause like I would never do the same as, cause it's like you're messing with something potentially their editor might already help with or help give you a better idea about. Yep. So it's like, you're stressing yourself out for no reason.
Well, and that endless tinkering, I think is not good. It's really good for me to have the distance, right? To lose the fire of the like primitive emotional response I had to the piece and then be able to come back and look at it. Like, who wrote this? Like, I don't even remember this. Do I like it? Yeah, but this line could go. It's easier.
Yeah, because when you're in, like, an emotional state for certain poems, everything feels so necessary. And then when you go back, you're like, oh, I full-on wrote so many cliches because of how I was feeling in this moment. And now I can get at that proper moment without pushing the reader out with, like, my heart was ripped to shreds.
Yeah. But I think it's important to have those cliches as placeholders. You're working through.
Oh, yeah.
Only because sometimes you'll have I feel like that happens to me where I have a creative block if I don't just keep pushing through. And then I know that it's bad. Like my brain is never going to be like, oh, that was okay. It'll be like, you wrote a piece of garbage. Mm. And it's going to like be locked.
I know an award-winning author who wrote by, he'd put an XX in the place of an adjective because at the time he couldn't think of something and he knew he'd need something really good. And that just always struck me as the most counterintuitive way to write. Works for him, obviously.
I'd always do a thing where I mean, at least put XXX. Know that I can. Yeah, that's a great point. Where I'll put something in parentheses and be like, that's a note to myself to remember what to do there.
Dana,
later. Don't
forget to mention the garage.
Something like that. Yeah, yes. Yeah. In that voice,
100%
of the time.
Oscar the Grouch telling you what to remember.
That's one of the many like literary voices that talks to me. Yeah. It's like,
Dana.
Yeah, it's great.
Dana.
Yeah. It really works out. Yeah.
Pour me some more Prosecco.
I will. No,
that was the voice. That was the voice.
Now, there's a lot of poems in here, but you also, there's a lot of visual elements. So do you want to talk about that?
Yeah.
The incorporation of that?
For sure.
Because I think that it really... It's a really beautiful addition to what you've written in terms of like that talking about emotional connectivity, like how the image or the visual can like enhance.
Mm, thank you.
Yeah.
I again, shout out to Anvil because the book really feels like it like arose from a sigh in my chest. Like it came out looking like I hoped it would look, and they were amazing at letting me inject graphics from a book from 1898 that's in the public domain.
Yeah, there's cool stuff.
Yeah, there's some really neat stuff in there. So, so Serpentine Loop is a book about ice. It's a book about skating on frozen rivers and falling through them. It's about skating in the skating rink. It's about growing up with the physical language of skating. And so in the book, I take words from skating and from the rink and I explode the definitions to talk about other stuff. So as a kid, I was always really interested in the marks that were left on the ice once the person had finished skating. So skating generally, you look at the way that the body is moving throughout the program or throughout skating the school figures, which Serpentine Loop is one of. But I always like to look at the tracings, what was left on the ice. So there's a lot of crossover between skating and writing. For example, when skaters are doing school figures or compulsory figures like the Serpentine Loop, they would use a scribe, which is a big compass style tool, and scratch perfect circles into the ice. And then they would put the tool away and they would skate over them until their bodies could memorize how to make perfect circles and to trace them perfectly on each foot 3 times. So and so, okay, so we've got the notion of the scribe. There's a figure called a paragraph. There are, you know, brackets. There's all this like weird shared vocabulary between skating and writing. And I guess it seemed really important to me to illustrate and demonstrate the crossover between the line of the page, the scoring of the sheet, the blank page, the trail, all of that. And one of the most interesting ways for me was to go to a historical document like this book from 1898 and include some of the actual graphics, and then to use words to make a trail for my own interests. Thank you and good night.
Great work. Great work.
I like that. When I was reading about the part where they used the like nail bit to
describe
to scribe it in.
Yeah.
And I also was like, wait, so then at the end of every training session, was this just like, was there just a bunch of infinity signs entirely etched into the skating rink? And did they have to like, didn't that mess with the rink?
So there's different sessions for skating freestyle and skating patch, which is what you call the 45-minute sessions, where everybody gets a 15 by 20 foot section of the ice. There'd usually be 20 slots on the rink, and each person would be assigned, oh, you've got patch number 8. And they would go there and for 45 minutes work on whatever figures they wanted. And at the end of that, and you wear separate skating boots for that. You have right. different blades. They have a different toe pick so that you don't trip as much.
Toe pick.
So, yes, at the end of that patch session, there would be an entire sheet of ice that was filled with people's figures. And then the Zamboni would come on, and then it would be freestyle.
Cool.
But they...
So the Zamboni would get rid of all of the...
Yeah, they're very, very, very thin.
Okay. In my head, I was like, they're just... deep into that ice.
Not at all.
Causing
not
everyone to trip ice. Everywhere.
When you're watching skating or you're watching hockey, like the Zamboni comes out X amount of times because they're tearing the fuck up out of that ice.
Well, freestyle and hockey obviously is way worse on ice. They bring out the pail of slurry and they'll patch it. But, I mean, you guys have been public skating. You see how the Zamboni works, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah, we're Italian. We know how the Zamboni works.
We actually
Zamboni's actually trademarked, and we're supposed to be calling it an ice cleaning machine.
Ice cleaning machine.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to call it
that. That's not very Italian.
Sorry, Zamboni. Too late for you. I liked when you were kind of introducing just now, talking about what the book is about. You talked about all these different types of skating and water and what that is, because I think a lot of times when people think of skating, they immediately think of the more glamorous, you know, Olympic competition skating and like the weird elements that brings up like pop culture wise. But at the same time in the book, you also, like you were saying, like talking about outdoor skating and like, it's so much more rugged and it's dangerous.
Super dangerous.
It's super dangerous. And I mean, I grew up in a small town and there's definitely so many stories of people falling through the ice or assuming that a pond or a creek or something is safe when it's not. And so you do throughout the book, like bring in these different elements of safety versus danger, not just with the ice, but also, you know, being a young woman and all of these other things kind of come together. There's always these little opportunities for cracks that are going to fuck you up. And your book deals with that very beautifully and interestingly. So well, I don't know if you want to talk about.
Yeah, that. No, thank you for expressing it like that. You know, with skating, you're always on, you're never just on the flat of the blade. You're always on the inside or the outside edge. And that, in thinking about things that I experience in my life now here in Vancouver, I'm always interested in what are the ways that we include and exclude people? What are the ways that we're cutting people out? Or what are the ways that we're isolating things? And a lot of the poems are informed by the ways that we either come together or hurt each other. And I think that there is an inherent danger in all that. I mean, and also like skating, it's such a funny thing. Like I joke around with people that are like, oh, you wrote a book, what it's about. And then I have to kind of like steel myself and admit like it's the dorkiest thing of all. It's a book of poems and it's about figure skating. Like what could be possibly dorkier than that?
I can think of so many things.
Go.
A book of poems about romantic comedies.
Oh, okay. My people.
Yeah, we're here for you.
Yay.
When you explained that, I was like, yeah. I'm like, I had to always be like, it's a book of poems.
Right. Right.
But no one who's written a book of poems about trees or plants feels like that.
No, maybe they do.
Do they?
I don't know.
I feel like they're proud.
Well, they're saving the world.
I'm proud of my terrible concepts for my books.
But I think, I don't know, I think rom-com goes beyond that in a way that hopefully Serpentine Loop does go beyond the preciousness, right? So, yeah.
I feel like it barely even touches on the preciousness. And when it does, like the way that you deal with it adds a commentary or a depth that separates it from that, which is what's great about the book.
Excellent.
This podcast is all about praising Ellie.
This is my kind of podcast.
I'm going to keep furthering it because I did like the... as Dina was saying, it was interesting seeing the concept because you had told me originally the concept and I read so many of the poems and like, I'm pretty sure I read earlier manuscripts of it.
You read the first draft. Yeah. I think
that was like a long time ago.
Yeah.
And, it was the poem about the uncle that was never met because of drowning. And it was just like, and it was this idea that I was like, oh, it be the way that the water underneath ice in a thing became a mechanism to lose people and was so, I was just like, damn, yes. Like that, the way you were explaining it before, it hit and it hit so subtly. I was like, yes, now I get it.
Excellent. Yeah. There is something about the way that we kind of like crash into each other and fall through things emotionally. Like we emotionally freeze, right? And yeah. We also, we annihilate ourselves by getting ourselves into bad situations or whatever. And we get, not to be too pun related, but like we really do get swept away. Right. So, the whole, string of poems about my uncle, those are pretty much the only fact-based poems that are 100% true. I had to piece together. Yeah. The other poems are all informed by something I either slightly experienced or I witnessed or, that was around me, but not all of it's a book of poems, not of nonfiction, except the poems about my uncle. I scoffed, copies of the Harvard Crimson from like 1947. And I stayed really faithful to the words that were used in those published documents. Where I don't and where I imagine what was going on at that time, I'm really careful to use the words I imagine, I suppose, right. Some say. Because, you know, piecing together how somebody skates down the Charles River away from the family home back to Harvard in the middle of the night, his Harvard roommates thought he was back home with his family, and his family thought he was back home at Harvard. And nobody knew that he'd fallen through the ice, and they didn't find his body until the spring melt. So there's a lot of supposition and mystery around right. that.
Ugh, it's so creepy.
It is creepy.
It's so weird, yeah. Ice, scary, but also kind of great. Yeah.
Also, quick question. Do you love or hate the song The River?
By Joni Mitchell?
Yeah.
I love it.
There you go.
Okay. I love it. Yeah, I have a friend named Kevin Fox, and he's a musician in Toronto, and he's actually played that on a cello. He does it all on the cello, and he loops the cello over and over into the different melodies of that and the harmonies of that, and then he sings. It's so beautiful.
That is a beautiful song.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Do you know the song Skates by Hayden?
Would you like to sing it for me, Dina?
No. But it's a long narrative song about an older man who comes into like a department store buy skates because his wife drowned in the river, and he's telling the clerk this like seems like a teenage boy who's a clerk.
Wow.
About how he's like going to buy these skates because he needs to go on the ice to find his wife because she's drowned be with in her? The summer. It's just to like where she is in the river. It's crazy. Oof. Upsetting.
Okay, now I'm gonna
Google
that. Yeah, you
should definitely listen to it. It's a really beautiful.
Can that be our outro music?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't afford it, but
it's
yeah.
It's okay. Really intense. It's
Dina great. And I will try and sing it with different words.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Hate or love The Cutting Edge?
Love.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was like referencing it when I said topic.
I know, but I was just like,
I love it. I love it. And I also loved Blades of Glory. I watched that as many times as I can.
Question.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Those are both great.
I love them all.
Yeah.
Rollerblading.
Love it.
Cool. I like this game now.
I love rollerblading. I used to rollerblade like long distances, go around the seawall every morning when I lived in the West End. I used to play shinny at English Bay, play a little hockey on my roller skates.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
What about Blade Runner?
Never saw it.
Me neither.
Me neither. We're awesome. Okay. Do you remember 2002 Olympics?
No.
There were...
Oh, in Turin, in Italy?
The Winter Olympics. Yeah. 2002. It was in Salt Lake City? Is that... I don't know. Whatever. I don't remember where it was.
Okay.
I just remember when that happened, there were those Canadian pair skaters, and everyone said that I looked like... Jamie Salle, that was her name.
Oh, she's lovely.
And
yeah.
Everyone was like, you look like Jamie Salle.
I do. I see it a little bit.
Yeah. And I didn't have bangs like I do now at the time. And then I actually cut bangs as a result. I was like, oh, I feel like I'm going to get bangs now. This is too annoying.
No, she's awesome. Do you guys watch Battle of the Blades? I'm so heartbroken that got canceled.
I heard about it. But
oh, my God.
I
it was super cool.
It was figure skaters and hockey players together.
Yes. Brilliant.
Yeah. It is a good idea.
So growing up skating, the hockey, so growing up in Boston, like a huge hockey town, but I grew up in a family of all women and we all skated.
Right.
So we would go to the rink and it would be like, oh my God, what have these like doltish hockey players done? You know, they've messed up the ice and blah, blah, blah. So I never had any respect for hockey players. My mom divorced when I was 5. And at that time she was really well known in Boston specifically for having gotten a silver medal in the Olympics when she was 16 and a gold when she was 20. So, and she was also a doctor. So she was kind of like a hometown hero. So at all of like the sports events and the, you know, yada, 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 she would always get seated next to Bobby Orr, who I just assumed was going to be my father because it was not weird for Bobby Orr to like call the house and be like, hey, Dudley, are we going to that thing or whatever?
So weird. So your mom... is
they're different ages.
BFFs but, with well, number 4, yeah. Bobby Orr.
But we have like the picture of the goal scoring of the 1970 playoff games where he's flying through the air. He signed it to us. We've got that over the fireplace.
That is so cool. Mm-hmm. That's very cool.
It's a funny story.
He seems like a nice dude.
Super nice. Yeah. Great. He wrote a really great memoir too.
Yes, actually. I read that. I thought it was good.
And also Jordan Tutu's memoir. I'm a big hockey memoir reader, evidently.
I've only read one sports memoir. It was called Hitman
by Bret Hitman Hart. Oh, yeah.
That's the only sports memoir I have read, but I really liked it.
Any. Well, I don't think I've read any.
I can hook you up. Yeah.
Great. This is the most sports talk we've done since we had Belay on.
Sports talk.
Christmas episode, and he talked about curling.
Oh, yeah.
Burnaby, you're on the air.
Oh, no, I read boxing memoirs.
Oh, I haven't read any boxing memoirs. I forgot about that. That's good.
Yeah, but now I feel like my track record's fucked.
Well.
I got to go unlearn those.
You have to take that out of your brain?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you guys ready?
We're going to have a quick segment before we switch to our next segment, because this is the podcast of segments.
Wait, we got to go do the costume change, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
We edit that out then.
I transform like Wonder Woman, so I just
spin around.
It's time for another round of Dina's Rage Minute, and I'm going to set the timer. It's already set from the last Rage Minute, and we're going to use Sencha again as the
tone.
Yeah.
Okay. This is going to provoke a Pavlovian response in listeners. Whenever they hear a Sencha, they're going to flash to Rage Minute.
I hope they do.
Yeah. Hopefully we ruin Sencha for you.
On your mark, get set, rage.
You ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1, go.
Junkamashi! People being complete assholes about bathroom usage, there are actually legit reasons to be concerned about going into public washrooms, like disease or just other people's explosive shit or like bloody tampon. Like there are gross things that happen in bathrooms, but other people using them for reasons that are garbage is not one of them. So that makes me super, super angry. People acting like no one is allowed to be upset about the oil sands and also be sad about Fort McMurray. Like, guess what? We all contain multitudes. And if no one's allowed to be upset that we're ruining the environment too, that seems a bit uncool. So here's the story. We're only allowed to be upset about one thing at a time.
You can amp that rage on that.
Thank you. Cheap, gross, flimsy tunics in every store. They are ugly and disgusting. Please stop. I cannot fucking with that shit. Mosquitoes. They are shit nuggets from hell. All they do is ruin people's bodies. Oh!
That was a fast minute. I was with you on those, except for the mosquitoes. I wasn't that angry about.
Well, I have a bunch of bites on me, so I'm pretty mad about
them
right now.
I'm with you on that one. That's so, like, you feel so uncomfortable.
No, you guys, you know what? You guys are tender West Coast Canadians who don't really understand what mosquitoes are.
I grew up in the mountains in a different part of this province. And I definitely got eaten all the time.
Then you should be used to it.
I'm not used to it. I still hate it. Apparently, though, there are so many great things about menopause that I'm looking forward to, including your blood changing and like your body changing so that mosquitoes don't find you delicious.
That is just ageist.
I'm into it. I can't wait.
That's a cool side of ageism.
Yeah, like I'm really excited about it. It seems fun. Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I think at one point my mom said that was the only good thing about menopause that she was experiencing. She's like, mosquitoes don't love me.
Wow.
So.
I'm delicious forever.
Yeah. You get to be tasty for life. Daniel's not really tasty for life.
Great rage minute.
Thanks, everyone.
I believe the next segment. Oh,
yes. So, friend of the podcast, our editor, and podcast. General friend, person that we like very much, Sachiko Murakami, today announced she is starting a new project, writingsohard.com. That's what it was. I remember reading that
and it made me laugh.
Writingsohard.com. Yeah, and it's what are the worst things about being a writer? So she announced it today. She's going to talk to different people about what is hard about being a writer, and it seems really cool. And we need it.
Yeah. And to honor that, we were going to do a quick fire round of what's the hardest part about being a writer. Ellie, do you want to start? Real quick.
The hardest part of being a writer for me is when I'm totally enjoying the writing and then I have to interrupt that to go deal with daily life. Ooh. And it just feels like being pulled out of the best sex ever. Wow. It's the worst. I hate that.
That is sad.
Good answer. Good answer.
That's a good answer. Daniel, what about you?
Check on the board. Mine was I don't like the labor of writing. It feels exhausting all the time. And people on the opposite end, for me, writing does not feel like good sex. It feels like exhausting sex. But that, like, later on I can fabricate to relay to people that it was good sex.
Coming off of that, that is, for me, the hardest part of being a writer is just having 1/multiple day jobs. Like, that is the part that is so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I'm super productive, I feel great. But if I'm not, then I'm just like, oh, well, gotta have that job. So you don't have to live in that pig pen with Daniel's imaginary pig. Yeah, like just the reality of the financial non-benefits of writing is so exhausting to me. And I mean, some days I understand it, and some days I'm so bitter where I'm just like, nope, fuck that shit. I fucking hate it. Burn it down. I don't want it. So we have so many things. Sachi, these two are already ready for you.
We're ready.
Ready. So you can find us on Cantlit at cantlit.ca and on iTunes and Stitcher at Cantlit, on Twitter, on Facebook.
What?
Hold on. Where can't we find you?
Oh, on Instagram, on Tumblr. No, we have a Tumblr.
We don't have Snapchat.
We don't have a SoundCloud.
We don't have Snapchat. We don't have a Tinder.
No billboards. No billboards.
We're on Grindr.
We are only on Grindr and Scruff.
Ellie, where can we find you?
You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter.
What's your Twitter name?
It's at LEKG. And I also have a Tumblr, LEKG.
Oh, and then do you want to talk about any of your other projects or anything before we go?
No, I'm good. I don't know. I got other projects going on, but this was really fun. I like talking about this.
Buy her book.
Buy her book. Check out Thursday's Writing Collective.
Thank you.
If you have not, if you're not aware, be aware.
Be aware.
Be aware. Also be bear aware. Summer is coming.
Yeah.
Get your bear bells and your bear spray.
See you online on Scruff and at Pump Jack.
Is that what a bear sounds like?
Yeah.
Growl.
Closer to the big sound you made. No. Ellie, we have one last question for you.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm so ready. Bring it. Oh my God. She's preparing. Is she going to like spit take on me? What is it?
All of those noises really drive my throat up.
Okay,
it's like
I'm ready.
Desert in there. Ellie.
Yes.
What can't you with?
I can't with the soft poetry. When somebody reads a poem.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it's so funny.
That is the best noise ever, because you're like, yes, we get it. You are aware that a good part happened in the poem.
Sometimes if I'm in a room and that happens, I'm kind of into it. I'm just like, yeah, we're all together.
No, I do it. That's the worst part of it.
No, we all do it. We try so not
irritating.
To, sometimes you can't help
it. Oh, yeah, yeah. I definitely have done it before.
It escapes your body.
It does.
It's great / terrible. Mm. Well, everyone.
But I guess also it's like, it's a different form of clapping.
It is.
You get laughter for the jokes, but like a lot of poetry isn't jokes.
And
joke,
you can't clap in the middle of the poem and just be like, "Girl, so good."
And so, and that's like what the like,
yeah,
the snapping's for, yeah, which yeah. I also don't like. So I don't know. We're all screwed.
It's less destructive than the clapping.
Can I just ask everyone one quick question before we all?
Yeah.
GTFO. Instead of the sigh noise, whatever that noise is called,
I have an idea.
Mm.
What would you rather people did?
On like on sitcoms when somebody kisses or like
the
like
woo?
Yeah woo yeah
I was gonna say something totally like off. I was like, what if everyone just, because it's still quiet, what if everyone just hissed? They were like
that's so scary,
real soft.
The thing that's really weird about that little is that it is unplanned. Like, people don't mean to do
no
it,
one
right?
Means
so it's
to do it.
And yet we're
I try to do one for poetry reading.
We're all using the same register. Like, you rarely hear a guy go or a woman
same.
Like, it's always the same. So it's a convention in and of itself. So it's not as spontaneous as it might be. It's like a learned diction.
It is.
Right? So but I don't know, because I think the thing that's nice about it is that it, okay, now I'm sounding a little bit goofy. It could be the Prosecco talking, but
I like it.
It does create a community response. So the people in the room are like making this soft, non-disruptive noise together, which reminds me of James Cameron's Avatar. So I think we could plug ponytails when that happens.
Oh, no, I have heard.
I see you.
I feel like I've heard. The more spontaneous noise has been like, oh,
right.
like I've heard people be like caught off guard and be like, oh, like I've heard that one.
Yeah.
And that one's cool.
That's exciting.
Has anyone recorded and made like a sound collage of people going, probably.
Oh,
probably
for sure.
Kenny Goldsmith. Has
we need to, we, oh, I hope not.
No, no, not him. I've like heard that one before. I feel like it's,
I want to listen to it.
Mm. Mm. See,
well,
I did
everyone,
it right there.
Let's all do it in unison. Okay.
Now somebody slap me.
Okay. Thank you so much for listening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.